I'm sure you watched it. Our young guys went out there and did exactly what they were supposed to do.
No, I had PTSD. I told George and Cobb, I had PTSD back to the devastating Nuggets win of, you know, 3 weeks ago, because March. I was like, God, we can't miss.
So on that night, the formula was the same. What you caught was a Denver Nugget team.
Second night of back-to-back.
In Memphis at 5, that got into their rooms about 5:30 in the morning. That's a lot. They played a nationally televised game. It was the added-on game. And even then, when we were talking about that last night, I'm like, how do you look at that when you reschedule the game and go, yeah, that makes sense. Like, there should have been a better way. But that's a hard thing to do on the fly. I get it. There's a lot more involved than just saying, hey, get there and play. Because you got a lot of moving parts. So I get it. I'm not knocking the league on that one. But as we got towards the third quarter, and I'm talking to my friends in Denver, I said, look, here's what's going to happen. David Adelman's going to go in the locker room right now. He's probably, because he's not necessarily that guy, he's not going to necessarily, go scorched earth on his team, but he's going to go, hey, you guys already know, because I talked to Jonas Valanciunas before the game, and he said, we know if we lay down against these guys that they could catch us, and we can't have that happen. You know, they will compete, and he was right. So he's probably went in and said, you guys already know that these guys are going to compete, and you just saw that they tied an NBA record with 29 threes. That is the great equalizer. If you don't start attacking the way we need to attack and play this game with a little more passion, you're going to lose a game you can't afford to lose right now. And I looked at my producer, and I looked, who I'm very good friends with, and the on-site engineer, and I looked at the stats guy, and I looked at their radio guy. I said, it's coming for you guys, and it's nothing against our guys. But you're asking a group of 10-day contract players to close a game against a multiple-time MVP, a guy who's played in the Olympics, made his first All-Star game, is having a career year, and complimentary pieces that have been there for 4 to 5 years, and see that big banner right there in the left corner that says 2023 World Champions, they know how to win. And I said, here it comes. And the guy behind me is like, how do you know this? And I said, I have seen this play out, not just this season, in other years. And that's okay. That's okay. Because those kids last night, and I call them kids, they're grown men, but the young guys last night are doing the things they need to do, whether it's be in Memphis or somewhere else next year, to get an opportunity to further their career. Will it happen? Who knows? Will it happen in America? Who knows? But they have proven that they can go against good players and play. And that's true. Now, what they've also proven is you can't win games in the NBA with just this such a distinct lack of size and this distinct lack of depth and guys that have experience winning games. You're going to sneak a couple out here or there, but that's what it is. So, again, it's a hard time, without a doubt. I do feel for our fans, but at the end of the day, as an organization, what are your priorities? Is it just this season, or is it the future of the franchise? And that's, those are the decisions those guys in the big offices at the arena are paid to make. And they're the ones who will have to answer for them. They're the ones who will reap the benefits when they're good. We've seen plenty of it. We've had a couple of Executive of the Year awards come through our building, and we've seen them pay the penalties when they're bad, when they made mistakes. This is no difference. And I like everybody in our organization personally, as you know, Jeffrey. But at the end of the day, this is not show friends.
Nope.
This is show business. And it is a business, and you have to understand that. Hey, look. We are not that the ones that travel with us, we are not foolish enough to go, look, nobody knows what's going to happen in the summer. Nobody knows. And I always tell people, like, you never know. They may make a decision that they want to make some changes here or there. I could be one of those changes sometimes, I feel like. I know everybody's like, oh, that'll never happen. Brother, it's happened before. And it's happened to people with a lot more tenure and a lot more experience and, in my opinion, a lot more talent than me. So I never take it for granted. And you can't. It's a business. And that's why, I always want to preface this when I come on your show. Nothing is ever personal. I like all the guys that have come through our doors for the most part. There's some guys I haven't, our personalities don't necessarily jive. That's called work. I've worked in a lot of jobs over my years, and there's been guys I'm still very close friends with. There's been guys, the minute I left that job, I never spoke to again. Just didn't hate them, but just wasn't a guy that I wanted to, or a girl that I wanted to continue to be, cordial or friendly to, because we didn't really get along. That's fine. It's not personal, though. And it's never personal when you go through these games. And if anybody thinks that our guys are cool just going out and getting beat, they're not. Like, I'm on the buses. I'm by the locker room. I see these guys. They're competitive human beings, the most competitive human beings you've ever met. Nobody wants to lose. Jeffrey, if you and I go to a golf simulator, we're going to compete. We're good friends. We're going to share a few pops.
As long as my back's not killing me.
Yeah, if it gets to the point where we're banged up and we're just like, all right, man, my head.
Yeah, I'm not going to try to outdry. If I'm sitting there and my back locks up, I'm not gonna squat on it and try to outdrive you every time.
If we're both, complete, like healthy and good to go. Sobriety maybe helps a little bit too, because sometimes in golf simulators you part way with that with a couple of pops here or there. But if we're
swing
both
oil.
In it and I say, hey, let's just see who wins these last three holes. You and I's friendship for the next 20 minutes, it doesn't exist. We're going to compete because that's who we are. That's what drives us as guys who, you know, love sports and love the competition. Magnify that by 100 with professional athletes. And it's a different world. And that's why you see guys get flustered. That's why you see Bruce Brown, who's won an NBA title, drive the length of the floor last night, make a layup, and flex at four guys who weren't even thinking they were going to be in the NBA this year on the court and hoot and holler and go to his bench. And some guys are like, man, can you believe he did that? I'm like, yeah, I can. He's a fighter. He's a competitor. I love it. I don't care if you do something, you know, whether you're a baseball player that hits a home run 410 feet and you bat flip, a pitcher who strikes out, you know, a big-time hitter, a quarterback who throws a dime for a touchdown and you pump your fist, or a wide receiver or running back or other player that scores a touchdown. These are not easy things to do at the professional level. You want to celebrate it? My man, do it. Like, if you celebrate when you're down 30 and you get a dunk and you act like you just did the greatest thing ever, yeah, you might go, hey, read the room. But if you get a dunk in a big moment and you're a guy that doesn't have the reputation of the guy you dunked on, maybe he's an all-star, maybe he's a future Hall of Famer, and you want to flex at him, man, you let that guy know, I don't care who you are, I'm coming. And that's fine. And that's fine. These guys are – my point of it is these guys are not just cool. Like, and we're not sitting around here in Salt Lake City today going to, you know, the local hangout spot with our feet up going, yeah, man, I hope tomorrow night we just go out and it's the same, much of the same. No, everybody's trying to fight and be their best. That's always what it is.
Eric, we appreciate it, my man. Good to talk to you.
All right, talk to you next week, brother.
That is Eric Hastein, Memphis Grizzlies Radio Network play-by-play announcer. When we come back, let's get into the list. Cobb, you're going to talk to us about the portal when we come back. Stick around. You're listening to Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. This Saturday, for just 6 hours only, at the Bartlett location of Robert Irwin Jewelers, it's a 60% off sale. Yes, 60% off everything in the showcase. It's the real deal. It's not a markup to mark down. Everything in the showcase, 60% off. Doors open at 10 a.m. The sale will last for 6 hours until 4 p.m. this Saturday only. That means you can save 60% on diamond anniversary bands, diamond rings, and diamond pendants. 60% off designer jewelry. Engagement rings are 60% off. There's never been a better time to put a ring on it. Even those name brand watches are 60% off. There's over 1,000 items to choose from. The sale only happens once every so often. It's about usually in each store about once every 2 years. So go take advantage at the Bartlett location at the corner of Stage Road and Bartlett Boulevard, right there next to the Kroger, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. You can visit rijewelers.com for complete details. Let's get into the list. Transfer portal. All right, Cobb. So over at CBS Sports, your coworker has ranked the top 25 players in the portal. I believe Borzello has also ranked the top 40 in the portal. But here's kind of what I wanted to discuss with you. Do we get a sense, you know, everybody's throwing around the numbers. I think I saw yesterday, I think it was Field of 68 had a tweet. Top bigs are going for 4 to 5 million. Point guards, I think, were 3 to 4. And then wings were 2 to 3. Is it not a little interesting to you that it feels like it's almost the inverse of the NBA, where I feel like wings are the most prized commodity, then probably point guards, and then bigs. It feels like in college basketball, we flipped it.
The game has changed in the last two seasons in particular. You look at the way Michigan just won its title, and you look at the teams that were there at the Final Four, and you look at the way Florida was constructed when they cut down the nets a year ago. Big men are back in college basketball, and not just like, hey, we're going to have one. It's like, no, you probably need two or three who can realistically compete at the highest level. So that's different than the way it was 5 years ago. And so I'm not surprised to see the market being set where it is. It's why you see a guy like Flory Badunga enter the portal, because you're like, oh, he was one of the best players at Kansas. He has eligibility remaining. Why would Kansas let him get away? Well, if his agent is telling him he can get $1.5 million more going somewhere else, I don't blame him. I think I'd get in the portal too if somebody offered me $1.5 million raise.
Well, I guess in a certain way, it kind of makes sense. So we still live in a world where the best players want to get to the NBA. And so if you're good enough to go to the NBA, not always, but in general, you go to the NBA. And so if you look at like what the NBA values, what the NBA doesn't value, back to the big, you know, back to the basket bigs. It's not that there isn't a role for those guys. Like there is, but it's clearly not valued at the level that an elite scoring wing is. Well, all of a sudden in college, that is going to be a skill set that you would look for. And along the same points, it's kind of why Munns and I were talking yesterday, the fact that Bradshaw has still not gone into the portal, but it certainly doesn't feel like Bradshaw is going to return, despite the fact maybe early in the process you thought there was a good chance he's coming back. It feels like he's going to try to get paid again.
Well, he should.
Yeah, and I want to be clear, that was not a criticism.
He's also not the archetype of player who I think you're going to win a national title with. I'm not saying that like Memphis should have realistic national title expectations next year, but in terms of maximizing like the way the best teams are winning now in college basketball, I don't think the Aaron Bradshaw archetype is actually what you're looking for. I don't think he's tough enough. I don't think he rebounds well enough. I don't think he protects the rim at a high enough level. That's what it's all about right now. It's like for a few years there, it was, oh, you got to space the floor, man. Your five man, if he can't shoot and if he can't switch on to a guard, which are the things they value in the NBA, like it was like, oh, the same way in college basketball. If your five man can't do those things, then you're SOL. Now it's not like that. It's very much, you look at the bigs like Merez Johnson and Adai Mara for Michigan, non-shooters who just made life absolutely miserable on UConn and on everybody else they played when you tried to step foot in the paint. So it's about big guys who can run the floor and rebound like maniacs. I mean, that's really what it's about. That's the type of team that has won the last two national titles. I liken it, Jeffrey, to the schematical shift that we saw in football, where Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase and this amazing group of skill players win a national title for LSU in 2019. And then you got Devontae Smith, a slender, skinny wide receiver, wins the Heisman Trophy with Mac Jones throwing for 4,000 plus yards. And, right. And then all of a sudden it changed. It's like Georgia, smash mouth, Michigan, smash mouth. Right. And it's like, oh, man, college football has gotten physical again. And that same thing is happening in college basketball. And that's why you're seeing these bigs be as highly priced as they are.
Well, and like even to use your football example, I mean, we've seen it in the NFL. I think part of the smash mouth element was in order for defenses to adjust to all of those high prolific passing attacks, defenses got smaller. And then all of a sudden,
Now the schematic advantage has gone the other direction. And
correct.
Now it pays off to be bigger. Right?
Now you beef up on the lines and get you a running back or two and try to pound the rock. There's less risk.
You look at the way Alabama and Louisville played basketball this past season. It was like the perfect way to play in 2022, in 2023, maybe even in 24. Like Alabama made a Final Four playing this way, five out. A lot of guys who can shoot it, versatility on the defensive side of the ball. Louisville, they tripled down on it this past season. Like, and I bought it. Like, I bought it. Was it line, hook, and sinker? Whatever.
Hook, line, and sinker.
Right, right. I was all in. I was like, Mikal Brown,
you know me. You know me. I'm a huge fisherman.
Of course. And then you got, you know, they had Mikal Brown Jr. They had Adrian Woolley. They had Isaac McNeely. They had Ryan Conwell. I was like, oh, my gosh, this is the best three-point shooting team ever constructed on the face of the planet in college basketball. They're going to make a Final Four. No, they did not. They flamed out in the second round. They weren't tough inside. They couldn't hang with the big boys. They got their faces caved in by a bigger Duke team more than once. And now you're seeing, I think, teams gonna correct on that. And so that's I think the game has changed. How does Memphis fit into all that? I don't know, but the American is not like teaming with elite bruiser level bigs. So, you know, if you keep Aaron Bradshaw, he can help you. I just don't know that in the way we saw Michigan win, the way we saw Florida win, I don't know if Memphis is winning that way with Aaron Bradshaw as its five. He can be a part of it. He can be a part of it, but it's got to be a group of bully ball bigs, right? If you want to follow that blueprint. Now, Penny may want to do his own thing. He and the GM may have their own way to play, right? Maybe they think their schematic advantage is going back to a PJ Haggerty type, a lead guard who can just sort of run the whole thing for you, right? But your original question, it's like, why are these bigs commanding such massive salaries? That's just straight up. College basketball is different now than it was 3 years ago.
Well, and, you know, the other problem that I have is we can't have the intellectually honest conversation. This is not as simple as, would you rather have Aaron Bradshaw or not? Well, it's, would you rather have Aaron Bradshaw at what cost? Like, that's the other problem. And I mentioned this on the show, so sorry to the audience for repeating it, but it is driving me insane. I cannot stand this new movement in our business that is taking financial numbers from last year, and they're taking the numbers that are real numbers, but it's the number that the school spent on the team. Coach's salary, travel expenses, in general, those numbers. And we are acting like that is what they spent on the roster when that's not the case. Like, I respect front office sports. I do. But we had this entire movement on Monday night that UConn spent $21 million on basketball when Michigan spent $14 million, and look what they're doing. First off, that was the numbers from the previous year. That's not what they spent on this season. And secondly, that's not what they spent on the roster.
Right.
And I told George this. We have one peek into what Michigan did. Yaxel Lindenborg tried to play up the whole chip on the shoulder thing in the Sweet 16 buildup, and saying, you know, after I made the decision to transfer from UAB, I was hoping Bama was going to recruit me, and they didn't. And he was trying to play out like that chip on his shoulder. Well, Dusty obviously got asked about his answer, and Dusty May, to his everlasting credit, was like, yeah, I'm friends with Nate. They weren't fishing in our waters. And so to be clear, I am not also in this camp that Michigan just went out and outspent everybody. I don't think that's the case. But we are acting like Michigan was just nickel and diming this when Cobb, you know as well as anyone, they started five transfers. Transfers are no different than free agents. If you want them, they're expensive. Do I believe that Michigan was just the little engine that could? No. Do I also think that you just buy a title? Well, no, that's not the case either. If that were the case, to your Louisville example, they would not have gotten bounced in the second round. We would not have seen Kentucky get bounced in the round of 32. We wouldn't have seen Duke get bounced in the Elite Eight. Like, it's not the only thing that matters. It's the same thing in Major League Baseball. Like, if we set the Dodgers aside, but like, just always having the number one funded roster in baseball doesn't guarantee you a championship. By the way, it raises the hell out of your floor.
Well, I think it's easier maybe in baseball than any other sport to just throw money at the problem. And it still doesn't guarantee it. It still doesn't guarantee it, but it's more of an individual sport. I think where basketball is different in the fact that, like, all right, look at some of the players the Clippers have had on their rosters over the last 3 years.
Yeah.
I mean, so some of the greatest players to play in the NBA over the last 15 years, and they've done nothing, right? And part of that is these guys being past their prime. But, like, heck, I mean, you could say the Dodgers, they get guys who are in the tail end of their primes too, and it works because it really doesn't matter who Freddie Freeman's protection is in the lineup. There's not like a chemistry piece to that so much. It's like, can he hit? And the answer
exactly.
is yes or no.
It's a binary.
Right, exactly. Whereas basketball, it's like the pieces have to fit. And the Clippers are a NBA illustration of, like, sometimes they don't. And
sometimes they're not healthy at the same time. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I mean, for sure. So the Michigan conversation is interesting because, sure, like, they were well-funded. They were a top 10 in terms of roster spending. I'm fairly confident of that. But at the same time, like, they had to trust their eval on Elliott Cadeau. I mean, if Kalshi or somebody had put odds this time a year ago on who's going to be the Final Four most outstanding player, you could have gotten Elliott Cadeau at 500-1, right? That dude was coming out of North Carolina, labeled as a bust, labeled as a disappointment, had missed like 15 open shots against Alabama in the NCAA tournament a couple of years before, right? And then was poor down the stretch last season when North Carolina barely got into the NCAA tournament. And Michigan was like, no, we believe in this guy. And they probably paid, I don't want to guess what they paid for him. I could. But he wasn't one of the top 10 highest paid point guards, or if they did pay him if they paid him like that, they overpaid for him, right? But they believed in him. They saw him. They understood this guy's going to work with what we want to do. And so he ends up being the Final Four most outstanding player. And it's not like he was some poverty point guard who they picked up off the scrap heap, but at the same time, like, they had to really trust, like, their evaluation of how he was going to fit within their system. And so I think it's both. Like, it's money and vision. You have to have both.
No, I totally agree with your point. Scouting matters. Roster construction matters. But it's become the same argument. So I was going insane about this. Like, do I really believe, you know, Indiana was very clear in football. Like, the narrative was they're competitive, but they're not big spenders. I never bought it for a second. Does that mean that they're not better at scouting? That they're not better at executing? Like, you watch Indiana football the last year, and you are blown away by two things. One, their ability to not make mistakes. Never, like, how many? I think they were like one of the least penalized teams. Like, they had as few penalties as like service academies.
Right.
And then on defense, you never saw like coverage bust. They were like, they tackled really well. Like, that was just, you looked at it and it was like the old school definition of well-coached team. But then we got the Coach's Confidential series from The Athletic a couple of weeks ago, and one of the topics of conversation is, like, who are the big spenders? Indiana was consistently mentioned.
Well, see, that's the thing. It's always sour. I think it's sour grapes to a certain extent from some of these other programs, because they want to say, well, they only won, because they
no, no,
they
spent, but it wasn't. Like, it no, wasn't in that. It wasn't in that context, though. It was the. I do agree. There's always going to be a sorority girl element, no question. There's always going to be a jealousy thing. But do I really think Indiana didn't go in with the same, like, Indiana's team and who I'm trying to think, like, okay, Miami probably outspent them. Oregon probably outspent them. And Ohio State probably outspent them. I think that's it.
The frustrating part is that it's hard to know, because a lot of times
nobody says that. I'm with you. We don't know. But what's driving me insane is these people that are taking numbers that are not applicable, and they're trying to spin some narrative, and I can't figure out what's going on. Because is what's going on, nobody wants to talk about it as a professional entity? Is that, I'm very confused.
Oh, so think about this. I think the worst thing to happen to Kentucky basketball this year was that $22 million price tag that got fixed to their roster. And
so, yeah, and I'll so, tell you, maybe not to Kentucky basketball. I do think it was bad for Mark Pope.
Absolutely. And so internally, I think there is a concerted effort to be murky, to be evasive, to be non-committal, to put caveats on how much you spent. Right. Like you could text a coach right now who maybe you have a good relationship with, try to get a number for what they're going to spend this next year. One, they don't know for sure. Like we saw how the dynamics played out with Memphis a year ago, where it was like, well, if Haggerty comes back, these boosters are willing to pay X amount more. If he doesn't, that money won't be available. Right. So it's always fluid. It's always evolving based on the boosters and their meddlesome ways. And then it's also the coach is not wanting to be upfront about it, because if they say, oh, I had this much, and then you underperform, you look really bad. You say, I only had this much. Then you get labeled as a poverty program. And then what happens is other people who don't know your rival coaches, agents, they say, oh, well, this program had this much to spend. And they don't know. They don't know. They're just saying that because, oh, well, they Michigan didn't want to pay up for my guy. Well, I've heard that they had $20 million to spend and they didn't want to pay up for my guy. Well, I'm going to tell everybody in the whole world that like they had $20 million to spend, right? And so you
Well, and there's another numbers. There's another complicating factor. So like in the NBA, let's use a guy that has restricted free agency as an example. When he goes and gets the offer sheet from the other team, like that sheet exists and the league mandates like, you have to submit that. So if the Grizzlies theoretically had a guy that was up for unrestricted free or that was up for restricted free agency and the Jazz want to give him a deal, well, the Grizzlies will see the Jazz's offer. In college, if Cobb wants $3 million and his agent goes, well, you know, Utah offered him, and I'm sitting there now having to decide if that's real or not, you don't have to give me the sheet.
Yeah, you can bluff your way to getting way more money than really what the market dictates. And that's the world we live in now. That's why you see these coaches throw their hands up sometime and just be like, ah, like Dan Hurley on Monday night, actually technically it was Tuesday morning, talking in the last scrum he did before he left the arena. Oh, the portal's open. It's GM season now. And he's just like kind of dreading it because it's ambiguous. There is no Spotrac. There is no salary table that you know, like, oh, a freshman's salary is going to be between this and this. A sophomore's salary is going to be between this and this. If we had collective bargaining, a la the NBA, you know, Players Association or something, I mean, that's what it would be. We would have a centralized database where we could pull these numbers from, but we don't have that. And so it's word of mouth, it's innuendo, it's agents driving the discussion around what guys are getting paid or not getting paid. And then it's a lot of sour grapes from the teams and the coaches on those teams whose squads underperform, because it's never my fault. It's never the fact that I misidentified. It's never the fact that I didn't coach very well. It's always the other team had more money to spend. It's always that now. And that has become the biggest cop-out in college basketball. That, well, they just had more money. They had more money. If we had that money, we'd be right there too. We'd be cutting down the nets. At minimum, we'd have made it to the Final Four if we had the ability to spend what they did. And I get it. Like, having the money is important. You got to have a baseline level. But I don't buy the idea that if you're 19th in spending in college basketball, you have no chance. That is horse crap. I do not buy that for a second. I think the 19th highest paid roster in college basketball is still good enough, if coached and constructed well, to make a Final Four run. I'm sorry.
The other problem is, like, some of these deals are, it's not, I mean, they're not guaranteed contracts. And so the thing is, like, a lot of these contracts are extremely incentive laden. And you might, the 19th best team could, if they go deep enough, could end up being the 10th best team. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's so murky. And I have no problem with all of that. What I am going insane by is this. There seems to be this consistent push from making numbers that are not applicable and, like, drawing large conclusions.
Yeah.
That's what's
driving. Yeah, no, I got you on that for sure. You look at, like, the overall budget of a program, it might be influenced by a lot of factors. It might be influenced by, did they take an overseas trip?
It might be influenced by, are they still paying a coach that they fired?
Right, exactly. It may be influenced by their geographical location and how far they have to travel to get to
what
to
conference
games
they're in.
Yeah, there's a lot there beyond what did you pay for your players. And if we're using those numbers to try to basically come up with a team salary cap, then we're doing it wrong.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, let's talk with Jason Smith. We'll do that next right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Jason Smith is the co-host of the J&J Show. Start your day with J&J from 9 a.m. until noon each and every weekday. Also, coming up next Tuesday, Anthony Miller will join their program 10 a.m. next Tuesday before his M Club induction next week. Jason, let's start here. Are you getting a FedEx patch?
No, but I should for all that they do for this city. It's not just what they've done for several of my friends.
We'll pay them to wear it.
Lifelong workers at FedEx there in the hub. I got buddies, close friends that are FedEx guys. To my gosh, the snooping around they did with the Grizzlies in terms of trying to find out for the city paras, intentions to what they did to unlock the facilities projects themselves, Simmons Bank and obviously FedEx Forum, to now the money they're pouring into Memphis Athletics. We all should walk around with a FedEx patch somewhere on our wardrobe. We absolutely should as Memphians.
How do you think, I guess we're going to learn here, but like when we get into the portal, what kind of buying power do you think the Tigers are going to have this year?
Well, it's interesting because, I had Hitman and Hoops on last week, and I think for the first time, we started to wonder if there's a possibility the Tigers might have more than what they've had to work with. We've been working along this $4 to $5 million, frame for a couple of years now. At one point, that's quite a bit of money compared to the rest of the college basketball universe. And now we've seen it become less and less. And for the first time, Hitman came on last week and said, there is momentum to get that number up to somewhere between 7 and 8. And maybe they end up on the lower side of that. But it was the first, because, again, common sense would tell you that, you don't have donors necessarily or a new way in terms of rev share in terms of what's coming in to be able to go up. But maybe, again, maybe it's something we don't see. Maybe it is one of those donors. But back to the point, if you're reestablishing what you're working with and it's not just on that 4 to 5, your buying power to the point of your question, well, then maybe you feel a little bit more optimistic about it coming off Penny Hardaway's, worst season in terms of record and everything else. And so if you've got a little more, well, that helps you. And it certainly helps solidify what should be an American, a championship level team in your conference at least. And what you hope is that it can get you good enough players, Jeffrey, to where you're not getting sliced and diced in the non-conference against what's stacking up to be another one of the toughest non-conference schedules in the country, that you've got enough buying power to get you players that can hold up against that too. Because it's one thing, you had enough last year to win the American, it all went awry. But if you're getting a little more, maybe it's not just win the American, dominated, you've got to do that, make it back to the tournament, but you can fare a little better in the non-con. We can start getting back into questions like, okay, well, can an American champion get higher than an 8 or a 9 seed? That's what you wonder. So, your original question, buying power, I'm a little bit more hopeful, although nothing certainly promised there. A little bit more hopeful that you're not working in that 4 to 5, that maybe you got a little bit more. You're going to need it when you're replacing what figures to be 11 guys after 2:30 here and we get Fred Smith Jr.'s announcement.
Jason, it's been so just sort of scatterbrained the past week, 10 days with Final Four and the rest of college basketball that I've not fully processed or digested maybe what the local critical reception has been to the hiring of Gabriel Harris. And, you know, just looking at it on the surface, pros and cons, like obviously this dude, Stanford grad, like professional level front office type experience with the Stockton Kings. He's got some grassroots like in his background. The con maybe being he's not actively worked in college basketball within the last few years. Like, what's your take on his hiring? What are the early returns in your mind on kind of what he's going to do for Penny and the Tigers?
Well, I would just say a con too in this sense, and nothing against him or what he's, you know, what he brings to the table, but in terms of start time, you know, it had been one thing if you've got Gabriel Harris on, he's working for you since February. You know, he's still, as far I think John said, they're still in the playoffs, the Stockton Kings. That said, I know he's working ahead if he's still got one foot in with Stockton, one foot, you know, in with the Tigers. But right now he's got another job. And here's the thing, Cobb, even if he's all in with Tigers, he's helping them out. You know, a lot of this work has been done. It's something we've pointed to, you know, even if it's just the return of Thedford, William Warden, originally they were, you know, it looked like everybody was on board with Aaron Bradshaw. That may change if he goes ahead and jumps in the portal. I know the expectation from the beat writers is that he will. But my point is that how much is he bringing to the table in terms of the front end of this roster, right? Is it a deal where once Gabriel gets in, you've done a lot of your work? You see, you know, there's a few names out there already in terms of who the Tigers have reached out to. Is it going to be a deal where at least in his first season, he's really, you know, managing the back half of the roster, helping you there? What's critical is going to be clearly the front half, especially in a season that Penny's got to win. We keep pointing to the 2 years on the contract. You don't want to go, you know, into another year where Penny's on the last year of his deal. So it's either, you figure, contract extension year or bust, you know, for Penny going into the season. Certainly NCAA tournament or bust. And so Cobb, you know, to be kind of joining this late and literally a little bit later, unless, you know, the Kings are out of it in terms of the, you know, that G League playoffs that they're in, semifinals, finals, whatever they're in. I just wonder how much he's going to be able to help with this roster. That said, yeah, smart dude. You needed a guy like this in that spot, it felt like, just to take some of the work off of Penny Hardaway. We've talked about it. You know, can't do everything, has to delegate. And so I'm optimistic that at some point, you know, he's going to do good work for Memphis. My concern is he going to be able to make an impact in a season that Penny Hardaway desperately and really needs a roster to come together and to win in the season? So that's the question, is really the start time. Like we talked about, North Carolina had hired theirs, you know, in February before the season began. You know, has he had enough time? Has he done enough work yet? Is he going to be able on this roster to really make an impact?
Jason, you mentioned Fred Smith Jr. I'm not asking you to predict the future. We'll find out at 2:30. But most believe optimistically that he's going to announce for the Tigers. Let's assume that is indeed the case.
Mm-hmm.
We're kind of, you know, we're in a weird situation where a fan base that had been conditioned to really follow recruiting, particularly high school level, like we've kind of gotten out of that as of late. What would this mean for Penny if indeed Fred does sign with Memphis?
Well, yeah, at the floor of it, at the base level of it, it's something as a Memphis fan you can hearken back, whether it's nostalgia or whatever else. It's always been a good thing when a Memphis player, particularly typically a top 100 one, you know, like Fred Smith is coming to your program. So if nothing else, it's something that Tigers fans right now who don't have a ton to hang their hat on. Let's keep it real. I mean, Thedford is the best thing you know about next year's roster, because you know he's from here, and you saw a kid who loved playing for Memphis last year. You don't have much to hang your hat on. So just at 2:30 alone to get the announcement you figure is coming from Memphis is for a fan base that's been beat down, that right now has questions about its head coach and its ability to put together, you know, a roster that not just win the American, but they can really make some noise again on a national level. You know, that you need something like this. Memphis couldn't, I don't want to say can't afford to not get Fred Smith Jr., but you're really at this point, with everyone having expected now for a couple of years Fred to end in Memphis, it's something that fans can get excited about again. A hometown kid who can, you figure, be a guy who plays for you as a freshman. How impactful he'll be to be determined, but can play right away because of his size and his strength at 6'7", 220, 6'6", 220. But he's got that long wingspan. That's something you can get excited about. This program needs that. I know things quiet right now. They'll pick up, I suppose, as you start getting some commitments here over the next couple of weeks, hopefully, realizing that, you know, this two-week window is just for guys to get in. You don't expect to put the penny to put the whole roster together. But as I said to my partner John today on my show, what you do want to do is get some of your top priority guys early. It's the having to wait or having to settle for second or third or fourth options that's really gotten Memphis into trouble in terms of the roster building. So it would be nice in terms of early on to land some of these guys. I know we've gotten off the Fred Smith Jr. question, but no, it's big in the sense that you just – any excitement you can get around the program right now seems important. Again, we're talking about butts and seats last year down to in the 3,000. So Fred Smith Jr., that announcement will certainly help that. On the court, it's going to be – you know, that's – it's a – I mean, it's a really layered discussion. You would love for Fred Smith Jr. to come to Memphis and be a multiple-year player. The issue is that you're going to have to play him and keep him involved at a time where college basketball's older. Penny's got to win right now. Is he good enough to do that? Here's the other, you know, the other edge of that sword. You play him, he's good. Well, then the offers could start coming from the Power Four structure, and you could be losing him after a year because he was so good. And so, you know, you can't have it both ways here. And you figure, again, Fred Smith Jr. is going to be a guy that's on the court, particularly, you know, once you're in the American, where I think his strength, the way he can rebound, can help you, even if it's as a depth piece on that roster. So it's good news for Memphis, certainly. You get Fred Smith Jr. in the fold today.
I kind of like the player archetype that he is. You mentioned a few of the things just now, the physicality, the strength. To me, in a certain way, he profiles like a light version of Koa Pete, that bully ball forward with some physicality, maybe switch defensively, 1-5. And then you throw in the local ties too. It's like a gritty local kid, top 100 guy, maybe not a McDonald's All-American, but I like the idea of him being somebody who could play realistic rotation minutes for Memphis as a freshman, albeit probably not a star because of what you mentioned. Yeah. College basketball is older now than ever before, but I'm pretty bullish on what he could bring early on.
I really like him in the American. I do think, Cobb, you know, what he's going to be able to guard in college is a question. I think, you know, and you love what he brings to the table in terms of the size, the weight, the strength, the wingspan. He's not extremely athletic. What I will say, and I said this on our show, you can go to his dad's Facebook page and see it. His dad's been his trainer his whole life. His dad was like a Harlem Globetrotter in terms of the hops and everything else. Super athletic, still dunking at like 60 years old. But one thing he's done as his trainer is consistently and constantly worked on Fred's explosiveness. There's quick twitch athleticism that he'll never be able to get to, I think, that you're born with. But one thing that I do believe, and I've watched guys do it, they've worked on explosiveness. So you're going to get the best athlete, it feels like, the way he's been trained up. And again, his father kind of knowing that part of his game, listen, we're going to improve it as much as we can. I think explosiveness is something they've improved. But back to the book, I don't think you'll see him guarding any ones or twos. You're probably going to see him on most night guarding fours. That said, he does bring, you know, a versatility in terms of where you can put him. You know, he can face up as a three, or you can play him close to the basket as a four. There's a lot to like. And, Cop, to your point, I really like him in the American. Again, you know, there were times this year where Memphis was getting punked inside. That's not going to happen in the American on most nights, you figure, if you've got Fred Smith Jr., especially once he's in there and experienced, you're not going to get pushed around. He's the kind of guy that does the pushing. And so in the American, I really love the kind of player that he can be. And we're going to see what he can do against, you know, some of the best in the country, because Penny's continued to show us that they're going to continue to schedule that non-con, you know, as tough as anybody. So, I think defensively there will be challenges for Fred Smith Jr., but eventually, hopefully, he's a, you know, multi-year player for the Tigers that fans are, again, falling in love with, and it's given them more reason to love this team and want to get down there and watch them. Those are the kind of connections you need, and You need that. Listen, nobody expected Keaton Wagner to pan out. That's the other part about going and getting a couple of freshmen is that, you're not paying the huge money in this instance. You're not talking about top 10, top 25 freshmen. And so what you need is some of these guys to hit in a way that, where you're getting a pretty good return on your investment. And I think there's a great chance of that, Cobb, to your point with Fred Smith Jr., that you're getting a great return on investment in using some of that other money that you've got left to go out and complete the rest of the roster. Hopefully it's going to work out in a great way for both sides here.
What have you made of the job Penny's done basically since the end of last season? And where we go from the press conferences, the messaging, the staffs and whatnot, like how do you feel about where Tiger basketball is today compared to the end of the season?
I don't know, man. I mean, I guess Penny said what he needed to say at the presser. I know we spent some of the time wondering, is he a little bit too focused on the activity of the media around him as it relates to doing his job? That said, since then, and Ed was out there, the key for me out of that presser was we can't keep waiting. That's where I go back to. You need to hit some of these priorities that you're going with off top. That goes back to the kid, Bradley, that you missed on. You had to settle for Javon Quinterly. It's not just waiting on P.J. Haggerty last year. So again, it feels like you need to hit early. So I say that to say this to you, Jeffrey. We haven't talked to him since. And that's an approach, right, to roll up your sleeves and go to work. I mean, they've hired Tony Madlock since. I know, I think Tony's been on at least in terms of on the radio or done a couple of interviews. But other than that, I've reached out to Tony. We're trying to get him on the show. I haven't been able to. That's not going to determine wins or losses next year. But my point is, there's one approach in rolling up the sleeves and getting to work, and they did that two off seasons ago, and it all, ended up being fine and dandy. But you also have to still sell tickets. You also have to get buy-in back. So I'm not sure Penny Hardaway, who isn't the kind of guy who's going to roll around all over town and make all these appearances, I feel that part of it's not, it's not over just because you had a bad season. And so it's just like, kind of like the column that Calkins wrote, and Jeffrey, you'd have read this a couple of days ago about the Grizzlies and how, at a time you're asking fans to stay with you, well, it'd be nice if you're a little bit more transparent with everything that you're doing or just out more or giving us, whether it's para, giving us the, hey, in the face of all this, everybody trying to relocate you, you don't have to tip your hand on lease negotiations, but hey, you want to answer this? Just, hey, well, how about your general manager that you're giving a second chance to rebuild? Back to Tigers. Partnering with the community when things aren't so good isn't ever a bad thing to do in my mind. Even if, again, you've decided the work, rebuilding is more important. And so I would just say that, getting Penny Hardaway himself, getting out more, getting fans to buy in again, because when he is, dude, he's still Penny Hardaway. He's still that celebrity, that guy that, most Memphians grew up idolizing in terms of that player. And by the end of it, he's usually got you eating out of his hand. And so I would just say that it's, again, yes, the work's got to be done. That's the most important thing, the priority. But, still selling the program, especially at a time where you're back to, season ticket sales are dropping and there's no butts in seats, no excitement. I still think it's part of it. So I long-winded answer, Jeffrey, what you're doing. But I still think you got to sell this thing as much as you can with the state that you're in. Perhaps, again, and my guess is, Penny feels like his best way, to get that done is to make sure he's got the roster and everything else to get people excited again, which, I can't fault him for at this point. He probably we know that he's taken some of the media coverage of him personally. What's the point of talking to them if you think that they're out to get you?
Jason, we really appreciate it. Thank you, my man.
Take care, guys.
That is Jason Smith, of course, of the J&J Show. Again, next Tuesday, 10 a.m., Anthony Miller will join their program. Do you have a new car in mind that you want, but you're not sure if it fits into your budget? Whether you're dreaming of a smoother ride for your summer road trip or just wanting a new upgrade, Leaders Credit Union wants to help you find an auto loan that works best for you in your financial journey. Visit leaderscu.com/ESPN to learn more. Leaders is your financial champion for life, and they're federally insured by the NCUA. Leaders is, of course, a not-for-profit financial institution fully owned by its members and operating for their benefits. They offer full-service banking, including checking and savings accounts, loans, mortgages, credit cards, state-of-the-art technology, and more to help you move forward. Again, visit leaderscu.com/ESPN.